Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast, the Bold Statements Edition. It's a college football podcast, but, you know, it's the offseason. And I think that it's come time for a Ryan Nanny original. Say hi, Ryan.
Hello. I'm so damn proud of our audience because I like answering questions on this podcast. They frequently give us interesting and clever questions. But I thought, why not mix it up a little bit this offseason? Why not ask for our good and kind listeners to give us bold statements with which we can either agree or disagree or something in between? And man, in true, the most American thing about our listeners is they were so much better at making bold, possibly incredibly wrong statements than about asking thoughtful questions. That is United States as hell. Wave that flag.
This ain't a podcast about research. No. It's about saying it with your chest. Say it like you mean it. That's all.
Say what you know is true, even if you haven't verified it with fact.
That's right.
Stick your foot in it.
Yeah. I think that before we start, anything college football related? I don't know. Ole Miss lost its letter from the NCAA. They don't have a copy of it. They're like, I don't know where it went.
Yeah. Whoopsie. That's I was thinking about that. Like, is that why they did, Ryan, as my lawyer, you can probably answer this. Is that why they did the whole thing as a video and released the transcript of the video, like as a extra way of showing we didn't write down shit. All we did was turn on the camera.
You know what? Let's go with yes. That makes the most sense because there's no other reason why they would do that video. Unless the one thing that did appeal to me about it is if Ole Miss can get away with just a pre-prepared statement video instead of a press conference for this, then every SEC coach is going to do this for quote-unquote media availability. Nick Saban is not taking another question for the rest of his time at Alabama. It's all going to be prepared statements on video.
That and
just started a personal YouTube.
I want Nick Saban to do a personal Snapchat so he can personally direct a rant at you when he gets angry at you, and he can't do it all at once, so he has to escalate snap by snap, right? So you just get, you know, like 10 seconds of, and I don't know, I mean, if you're going to say those kind of things, you just go out there and I guess you just say it.
We just take it one vlog at a time. That's it.
And then eventually it's like the next vlog. By the time he forgets to take off the filter that's like the raging screaming demon, like he's doing the part where he's like, listen, I appreciate the valuable service you raise interest in our sport, but he's saying it as Satan.
Here's the thing, it's not a filter.
Yeah, no. Nick Saban with the beauty filter, or with the beautiful wreath and garland, right, like above his head, like the flowers, infuriated and going, you get our players to believe this shit, and that's why the media makes our job harder than it has to be. Like, Nick's got, that's it, like 16 snaps.
You have Bambi, eyes.
Yeah, with big Bambi eyes going, like shit through a tin horn.
We need somebody.
Respect your opponent.
Somebody out there, please, when you get bored enough in spring ball, please run up on Saban and filter him while he's talking. Dude, you'll never be invited back. And
somebody's going to do this at SEC Media Days, I promise you.
Yep, yeah. We won't hire you. There's literally nothing in this for you. There's no incentives.
We'll thank you on a bad podcast.
You'll be a terrible podcast god.
Let's just start charging through these.
Let's jump into it.
I wanna defer to you two if you have one you want to start with.
I'm gonna let you lead. Lead.
All right. All right. We'll start with one of my favorites. This is from Chris Barnwall. Chris Barnwall likes to write to us. He's a friend of the podcast. I'll give him that status, and he's gonna need it because this is his bold statement. The Sega Dreamcast was not ahead of its time and deserved failure. Hey, Chris. I'm sorry you're fucking terrible at Crazy Taxi. I am. Yeah, I'm sorry that you can't successfully get through more than a minute and a half of gameplay and that you find The Offspring's rockin' soundtrack distracting.
Yeah, the game only had two songs and like one level. So what?
I'm sorry you can't appreciate the fine design innovation, odes to Japanese culture, taut plot lines, and yet open world, casual, freewheeling action of Shenmue. Okay? A revolutionary game that never got its due.
I mean, let me hit you with the original Soul Calibur. Back when folks were barely even understanding, wrapping their minds around Virtua Fighter. Back when the mediocre Tekken was out, they hit you with Soul Calibur. Come on now.
Man, Soul Calibur, for everybody who had a fighting game, Soul Calibur was it. It was Soul and it was Calibur. You put them together and you blew minds.
They had the ripoff of Ryu who had the long staff. And the guy who was a knight who turned into a demon?
Yeah, that guy with a big hammer. I will play any game where there's a big old badass.
His heart was falling out of his chest, Chris.
Exactly. Big womping hammer.
Let me ask you, when did Randy Moss get on the cover of Madden? It wasn't until like 2009 or something, 2014. Long ass time, right?
After 2K had it three times.
Yep.
Three in a row.
Also, low-key, Dreamcast, because it was disc-based instead of cartridge, as most other, a lot of other platforms were before it, super easy to get illegal games. So easy.
Oh, man, the easiest. By the way, I'm not done here. I have a good Shenmue story. It's not mine. I'm going to tell it because it's great. Because it illustrates the brilliance of one of our friends, John Boys of SBNation.com. John Boys and his brother both played Shenmue, and his brother's character loaded up on his profile had all of this money that he had earned in the game, which was not entirely easy to do. And he piled up massive amounts of money as this character in a fictional world, right? So John is the older brother. What does John do? John goes into the game, sees his brother has a ton of money, takes the fictional character bloop, 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 down to the arcade and blows it all on like pachinko and bubblegum. Like blows like 50 grand, like just sits there and spends all of his brother's money. So when his brother comes back, he's like, why do I have all this gum? It's like a magnificent big brother move. Oh, also NFL 2K, the Rams and NFL 2K are one of the best video game teams ever. The playbook is immaculate. And like, seriously, with Brandon Manumalu unit, you can get like 200 yards on this like tight end wheel route they have in that playbook that I've never seen anywhere else. It's just amazing. Oh, and they had Marshall Faulk. Their college games suck, though. I will freely admit. Their college
There's
games
that. Ass. There's that. 2K That's over Madden forever. Madden might have caught up by now, but everybody knows it's true.
Took you damn long enough, Madden.
Yeah, but NCAA was always better. Like, that's just a much better game. But yeah, that's his only fault. Otherwise, Dreamcast? Flawless.
I don't know about that. Also, it had a little the controller would be like winking at you and shit. It had a little the memory card had.
It had the only thing that could keep that could prevent screen peeking before they had like when you were playing against somebody, you could actually look down and call a play on the little screen in the controller.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if it didn't have nothing to do, it would make smiley face or something.
Yeah. Do you want to know when my dad ceased beating me ever in any video game? That was a sports game when we got a Dreamcast. Because he was.
Why you're not going to show me your cards? Oh God damn it! Blackjack is hard.
Spencer's dad is Bill Belichick.
100, more like Thrill Belichick. Yeah, I do have one I would like to answer.
Please,
Chris Barnwell. I can't believe you heard that wrong.
Get out of here. Just unanimous no. Unanimous no to that.
And you're a friend of the show, but you know, tonight you got to sleep somewhere else. Don't have to go home, but you can't sleep here.
Orlando, he can't help it.
Yeah, I've got this. Let's see. Kentucky will win the SEC East. No.
Hold on. Who's getting credit for this bold statement?
I'm sorry, yeah,
anonymous statements here.
I'm sorry, that's at Fake Gimmel. At Fake Gimmel, again, long-term. Longtime friend of the podcast. It's not happening.
Okay. For the sake of argument, let's look at Kentucky's 2017 schedule. Let's just play it out.
Not happening.
Brian, do you think that you're the first person on the entire internet to do this? Like, do you think even Mark Stoops has looked at his 2017 schedule?
Yeah, probably I am. Mark, call me if you want to know. Kentucky, you have to play road games against South Carolina, Mississippi State, Vandy, and Georgia. That's not terrible as these things go. And the cross divisional games that they have are Mississippi State and Ole Miss, which as of now doesn't seem like the heaviest load if you're going to have to pick two opponents from the West.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That Mississippi State game, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. No, you don't want to play them next year.
And with the exception of the Louisville game at the end of the year, this, and I say this as a Florida fan, this non-conference schedule, Southern Miss, at Southern Miss, though, so good on you.
That's a revenge game, by the way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's it is. True. That's true. Eastern Kentucky, Eastern Michigan. Yeah, this is Dookie water.
Hey, listen, that Eastern Michigan game, that's bowl team Eastern Michigan to you,
that's
buddy.
That's true. That's true. You're right. That's true.
That's an import from the factory, brother.
I will tentatively say that not because of Kentucky's own merits, but only because the SEC East next year might be the perfect storm of, oh no, we all shot each other fatally. I think this is a maybe. I'm not going to give it the straight no.
Maybe you drop the game at Georgia and count on Georgia to fuck up something along the way.
Oh, and Georgia will fuck up something along
the way. A Florida game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there was mine. I'm just saying that. Jason, you got a verdict on that?
On that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we settled that. Next.
All right. Let's do this one. This is from Attiker Finch at Dude 3000. Texas would have won if Colt hadn't got hurt.
Oh, boy. This is a common one online.
This is a fun one because it caused me to go back and look at the box score for this game. Do either of you remember how many yards Greg McElroy threw for in this game?
Oh, man. Nothing.
As few as possible.
Hold on. Let's do this Price is Right style. I'm going to let Spencer go first.
I believe Greg McElroy threw for 64 yards in this game.
Okay, Jason?
Put me down for 111.
Jason, you nearly doubled. Number, and Spencer's still over, so both of you lost. Greg McElroy threw for 58 yards in a national in a successful national championship game.
This is maybe the nadir of excellent Alabama football in terms of like the worst Saban ball display ever, because they phone the second half the hell in. They run every play to 40 set, right? Just like creeping to the line. They bleed every bit of clock. It's absolutely unwatchable. And like the secondary is just playing loose. So Garrett Gilbert racks up a bunch of yards and everyone goes, oh man, Texas really came back in that game.
Deplorable. Yeah, he also threw four picks.
Man, he threw four picks with zeal.
Yeah,
including like a shovel pass pick six right when he entered the game, if I recall.
Yeah, right in there to a lineman, I believe.
Yep, just here you go.
So
Bama needs help.
So let's get to the meat of the question though. If Colt McCoy doesn't get hurt, plays this whole game, who wins?
Well, considering that, you know, Colt didn't beat Nebraska.
Colt really didn't. Ooh. I'm glad you brought that up. I looked at that stat line. Mm-hmm. Man. 20 of 36 for 184 yards and three picks.
That's a Greg Davis line right there.
That was like, this Texas team did not play a super high caliber of team. I believe they only played three before the national championship. They only played three teams that finished the year ranked. And a lot of those teams were not known for having defense. Nebraska was one of them, and Colt McCoy struggled mightily. So yeah, probably
no.
Not. Probably
I think
not.
What we're saying is Ndamukong Suh won the national title that year.
That's true.
I'm happy to give Ndamukong Suh the Pritzker Prize for architecture. I'm happy to give him the Fuller Medal. I'm happy to give him whatever award he would.
You know what? And let's go ahead and count that at like as like a seventh of a Super Bowl for the Lions. You got it. You
hey!
Did it, guys.
That's look at more than they have now. So
that's
sure.
A lot. That's a lot.
Significant improvement.
Jason, do you have one?
Yeah, from Alice Dara Wilkins. when crediting shows for great seasons and penalizing them for bad, King of the Hill emerges as greatest animated show ever. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to disagree with that. I don't even need any sort of rating system, but I think that's pretty hard to dispute. The first, I'd say, two or three or four seasons are much stronger than after that, but not really a bad season anywhere throughout. Definitely nothing like, I don't know, The Office, where it just completely falls off the rails.
Or the last three decades of The Simpsons.
The last like two or three lifetimes of The Simpsons.
Where does South Park fall in here?
It's been the same damn show forever. It was never that great. Like, I think I watched it mostly in college, which is a little silly because it's more of like a middle school show that makes you feel like you're a smart grown-up. And like, I remember there being a couple minutes per episode that were really good, but...
Yeah, it was. I think it was new. That was his greatest asset. You said, man, the show is very loud and it is very new. And sometimes it's good. And then that went on for a while, and I think people caught on about four seasons in, and it just kind of went all downhill. When it's good, it's good.
But like the formula became really clear, which is like, oh, this show is so edgy, they're gonna call those people assholes, and then they're so edgy, they're gonna call the opposite people assholes, and then they're gonna propose that nobody really care too much either way.
Yeah, it's just sort of an exercise in like cheerful nihilism every single week, which, cool, I know it's coming. You're never really going to surprise me. I will say it was very short-lived, and you know where I'm going with this.
I do.
Yeah. But for what it ended up meaning for me in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, C-Lab 2021.
Yep. I also could have gone Frisky Dingo there as well. They're both...
Man, that was, they didn't even finish two seasons.
Yeah.
That's how you know it was good.
Yeah.
So based on this, this scoring metric, those shows would have gotten a one and a two. Those are pretty good. Like a lot of shows have neither a one nor a two.
Right.
Yeah. Like four seasons and we out. And the only reason we lost anyone on the cast and suffered any decline in quality was cancer. So really, like, grading on a curve. Really, really high level of difficulty. C-Lab's there. King of the Hill, like, so... That second season, go back and look at the second and third seasons. It's just nothing but hits, man. And they made so many of them. They made so many King of the Hills. Because you think, oh, man, in a Netflix age, like, you know, they've got, like, 16 shows. I can watch about 16 shows when I sit down. An entire season of the King of the Hill, it was a proper TV season. It had like what, like 25 episodes?
25, 30 episodes, yeah.
Yeah, 22
and most I also feel like more than, definitely more than South Park, probably more than a lot of The Simpsons, King of the Hill was not very dependent on what was going on in the world at the time, which is a good way to make something that's good then, but not a good way to make something that necessarily is funny 5-10 years later. So a lot of it still... stands up a ton.
If you're having this conversation at all and the words Family Guy enter your head, delete our podcast. Don't listen to us. Think about what you've done in life.
Now we have to move on to the next question. All right. There's so many evil ones. I'm sort of sorting through here. Let's go to the most evil one. Eric Seeds, at Eric Seeds, Empire Strikes Back is overrated.
Woo!
I know Jason took this one to the family.
Yeah, we were at dinner, and I was scrolling through these and saw this one and read it out loud, and my daughter could, like, it was like I just spoke in a language not of this world. It was like I said words that had never been uttered before. She could not believe that someone would come to this conclusion. Like, to her, I've always said, you know, I don't give her the hot takes about movies. I'll say, you know, Star Wars 2 is very bad, and she'll say, no, actually, that one's good too. But if you say Star Wars 5 is bad, I don't know.
Because in a kid's trilogy, which I hate to tell you if you haven't thought of it this way, It's a kid's trilogy. We just happen to enjoy it as adults. In a kid's trilogy, in the second one, it punched you in the face, in the gut.
Yeah.
Took you out back, beat you up with the tire iron. You're like, oh, cool. A main character might be dead or gone forever.
Another one lost an arm.
Another one lost an arm and, like, was strongly hinted that he was headed down some sort of doomed path toward the dark side.
A secondary character has been disassembled and is now Chewbacca's backpack.
But Chewbacca lost his best friend.
Yep.
A possibly traitorous, scandalous scoundrel entered the picture and may not be trustworthy in Lando. Right? Yep. Meanwhile, Darth Vader's like, woohoo! Like, if you're a Darth Vader fan, Empire is awesome. Running shit. Like, that's like peak Darth Vader. You look at it from the other side, he's like, my boss is real happy with me. Running shit, got things going, might have lost Luke, but got a tail on him. Took his hand, got you, son. Like, there's all kinds of, like, absolute, like, this is the one that really dad should like most. Because the dad, like, comes in and wrecks shit.
Yeah,
establishes, like, order.
The two most successful moments for the heroes in Empire are arguably when Han Solo successfully slices open a dead animal to keep Luke from freezing to death, mm-hmm. and when Han Solo escapes the belly of another giant animal to prevent his ship from being swallowed alive. So,
yeah.
Cool. And great job, yeah. guys!
Yeah, like the big move is we got away and Luke survives by falling down an enormous vacuum cleaner. Well done. It's awesome.
Like, Luke went poorly.
After, no lie, getting his ass fucking whooped.
getting tore up to the point where Vader's taunting him. Like, he's like, oh, here, I'm just going to throw some space garbage at you. Wah! Like,
somebody should recut that fight scene with Brent Musburger calling the Notre Dame Alabama game.
With the bruh sound effect in there. Bruh.
And the hand that was lost many decades later being used to, what was it, clone Rey, I believe?
Spoilers!
Is that the conspiracy theory?
I think so. I think Mark Hamill actually mentioned that as, like, that was the original proposal for Seven was, they've got Luke's hand. They're using it to clone stuff.
He's actually a starfish.
That's like way too George Lucas. It really should just be like, hey man, Luke's been on a bender for like the last 20 years. He ended up in some kind of weird places. He got kind of lonely.
You ever Tatooine. Been to a cantina orgy?
It's cold. One night. One magical night.
Yep.
Luke's actually just peeing off the side of that cliff.
When the child support summons came, he was like, I'm not who you're looking for. This is not the dude you're looking for.
I will walk away.
Will forget where my island of drunken solitude is. Where I get hammered every single night.
Where do I gotta go?
So I think our conclusion is
showing up and handing me weapons.
You will come back with a 24-pack of Bush Light and some smokes.
You will also bring chips.
I have one, which we discussed pre-show. So a little cheat here. There's a pre-show. The shutdown full cast is taking your questions. The question given here at JTurn14, Jared Turner. Taco Bell is superior to Chipotle, even without regard to cost.
Mm.
Now,
this is the one that, I mean, it says a lot about us. This provoked probably the most discussion
mm-hmm.
amongst us, the most philosophizing, the most consideration yep. of who we are and where we are on our walk.
Yep. I will actually admit, yes, I think for what it is and for its purposes, Taco Bell is superior to Chipotle. Here's why. I don't want any bias here. Yeah, Chipotle has given me food poisoning. So is Taco Bell. I could have just said, I've eaten at Taco Bell on multiple occasions.
We're good. We're on a streak now. So, food poisoning references on this
show. Yeah, sure. So was this 1 week ago?
No. This was another glorious time. When I rebooted an entire Chipotle meal that turned out to be part of that great Chipotle like spree they went on when they had like spoiled meat.
Oh yeah.
I guess there was a sale.
Yeah, so the lines were real short for a few months, thanks in part to Spencer.
I feel like Taco Bell has not had that, weirdly.
Taco Bell, if everything
Taco
goes
Bell
well.
Knows where to hide bodies.
Well, it also helps that most people who throw up after eating Taco Bell can reasonably say, like, it might have been all that gin last night.
I was going to say, there's confounding factors there, like, could have been the Taco Bell or could have been the Ripple. I don't know.
Also, they're throwing up at 3 a.m., not at work.
Yeah, exactly. Not just mysteriously on their dashboard.
Or they're throwing up at work, and it's definitely a confounding factor. Oh, boy, 99 bananas was not a good breakfast choice.
Yeah. So I will say this, though, that I think in terms of what they are, Taco Bell is meant to be consumed. I mean, think about it this way. Taco Bell knows what they are to the point where they created Fourth Meal. Because they're basically like, you're going to be out of your mind on something. There's going to be a big old bright light. And your stomach's going to go, help us out, buddy. throw us a bone.
They're like, you know what? Sleeping 9 hours is for people who wouldn't eat Taco Bell anyway. We don't need to cater to those. Give me the five-hour folks.
Play to the base. You don't need independence. You need the base.
Also, consider this, that, like, there's a book. You might have read it if you were going through some kind of, like, stoner intellectual phase, you know. Godel Escher Bach, The Eternal Golden Braid by Douglas R. Hofstadter. And it was talking about, you know, how you can take a bunch of simple elements and sort of braid them together into this, like, endless stream of creativity. That's been Taco Bell's menu for the better part of now going on almost 50 years, because they have the same ingredients and they keep making new things out of them. You got a burrito? Oh, cool. Why don't we put a taco in the middle? You got a taco? Why don't we put a burrito in the middle? You got a tostada? What if we put a taco on that tostada? You think they're done? Nope. They've gotten even crazier. They made a chicken taco where the taco was just chicken.
There's only one frontier really left for them, and that is to actually construct a giant church bell made of tacos.
Bong!
The literal Taco Bell.
And then, if you eat that, they'll just put it inside a burrito. Like, remember they had a taco where they were literally just like, why don't we put a soft taco and some bean
paste? I'm pretty sure they got Shaq to endorse it, too.
Of course they got Shaq to endorse it!
I like that every Taco Bell commercial after, like, the goofy stoner, whatever, like, talking dog or whatever, it boils down to cheesier, beefier, crunchier!
Whereas Chipotle is the ideal food source for people who want to lie about eating healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to have a burrito bowl. You know, I'm just watching. Yeah, the tortillas where all the trouble is. Mm-hmm. No, only a little cheese, please.
I'm just going to eat an entire pound of food.
Yeah, I'll be here tomorrow. Don't worry. It's part of my New Year's thing.
I'm going to eat an entire 3/4 pound serving of rice. What Chipotle does. Chipotle just serves rice.
Hey, what's sodium? That's probably good for you, right?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just going to have the same amount of food that pro wrestler Booker T advertised for Hungry Man TV dinners in the 1990s. Just a whole pound of food.
But don't worry, there's lettuce.
Yeah. lettuce is fulfilling. Like, to me, the question of Taco Bell versus Chipotle, it calls to mind that a human contains multitudes, and who we are today is not necessarily who we've always been and all that. Because, like, would I rather eat Chipotle? Okay, yes, if I'm speaking with, like, you know, if I'm speaking with my mind, yes, okay, fine. Chipotle, it seems like it's actual food. It's good. I think you could eat Chipotle several times a week, and there are far worse things you could eat. But if we're talking about what would I rather do, like the idiot that I actually am, I mean, come on, man. I raised my idiotic self on Taco Bell. It's too late to turn back now. I mean, I eat it several times a year, and every time regret it, and every time, you know, every time just think I'm definitely going to do this again. I am as stupid as I am. Nothing is going to change that. This is definitely going to happen again at some point.
Chipotle, you know, has done a lot in the business field. Taco Bell successfully sells people cinnamon sugar air. That's a menu item. More, that's basically a Cinetwist. You're buying air that's cinnamon sugar flavored. They sold that to you. They are the greatest company in the world, with the exception of Outback Steakhouse.
Agreed. Outback, good. The order goes Outback Steakhouse, Taco Bell, and then like that company.
Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah, sorry. Sega
Dreamcast, and then, Sega Dreamcast division, which is just one man waiting.
Which is what it's like. There's got to be like an official Sega Dreamcast like Facebook page or something.
There's one programmer. He's like those soldiers trapped on the Pacific Islands. He doesn't know that the Dreamcast doesn't make games anymore.
How do you pronounce it? Shenmue?
Yeah, Shenmue.
Yeah, so like there's got to be like a Shenmue 7 they're doing. And like that was the original game that was billed as like, oh, you can walk for like a year and not see the end of the city or whatever. So like this one's got to be even bigger, and it's just one dude doing all that.
Yeah, the fourth greatest company is that one that makes motorized coolers. My question that I do have another one I would like to ask. This is very quick though, because you can kind of just slam dunk it and run, which is what I'm about to do. Thank you, Lance Smith at Lance Smith 25. Said Matt Rhule will win the Big 12 before Tom Herman. I'm going to jump on that yes and just exit the train. Going to happen. Bye.
Woo-hoo. You know what? I have no honest knowledge or opinion about this, but Lance, you should screenshot this, and if it happens, buddy, you called it.
Dunk it. Also, given Texas's recent history of working with talented people and all the resources in the world, yeah, Matt Rhule's going to win the Big 12 before Tom Herman. Easily. Don't ask how. It's just going to happen.
I got to take. Please. From Jordan Stewart, Dear Burly Man on Twitter. Watching an entire football game beginning to end is torture. I like this because it's not watching an entire Big Ten game or Alabama game or AFC South game, just football. Football is bad. If you sit through 4 hours of it, that's terrible. That's a strong take. I can't endorse it, but I can understand it.
It has more. It is a take that at first you read and you think that's preposterous. That's stupid. And then you marinate on it a little bit. You're like, well, I do like that I can flip around and that I can sort of, you know, jump in, jump out. Maybe. Yeah, there are a lot of games that I really not want to watch the full 4 hours of.
Ryan, and I have been to a few of those.
If you take it literally, like watching it from beginning to end, okay, so you're not looking away, you're not looking at your phone, you're not flipping games, you're watching like the Thursday night ACC of interesting punts, locked in, no looking at anything else. That does not sound good. If you're at the game, maybe, okay, there's a drunk guy next to you who's being funny. I don't know, but yeah.
If we're not applying any qualifiers to this, if it's just randomly selected.
Your eyes are locked on it like Clockwork Orange.
FBS level, FBS versus FBS team game. Yeah, there's a good chance you're right. There's a good chance that those 4 hours are not all going to be entertaining, and by the end of it, you will just sort of want it to be done. That is unfortunate, but also, you don't live in a world where you have to do this.
No.
The nice thing about College Football Saturday is that it is the world's best serving of appetizers. Like, it's the world's best past appetizers course. Like, you don't want the crab puffs. Guess what, buddy? We got cannoli coming. Look out.
It's tortas.
It is. That's right. It's tapas.
Tapas, that's the word.
Tapas time.
Tortas is a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. But you could have small tortas as tapas.
You could have little tortas at your tapas place.
And then top it with the cannoli. Oh, Rutgers! I would also say this. Don't trip on nostalgia. It used to be worse. Oh, it used to be way worse. Because you might say, back in the days with Keith Jackson and Bud Wilkinson calling football games and just simplicity, not much in terms of camera angle distraction and all the foo-for-raw and hootenanny of modern media. It wasn't like that, man. There were like three cameras. It was rough. You got nothing. You didn't even get all 22. There's like eight people on the screen. Yeah, good luck. That cameraman is just Zaprudering it. He's looking for the guy. Has no idea how to track him. It's way better than it used to be. Remember, the past was bad. You want nothing to do with it. The future is great. Embrace it.
I'm going to use that to leapfrog to the next bold statement. This is from @Foster4Prez. Go big or go home on Twitter. And I do want to give you a taste of this Twitter user's bio, because I think it's important to the question. Amongst other pertinent things to his or her professional life, Foster4Prez is a Bud Foster advocate and a Hokie fanatic. And that's important because...
Does Bud Foster need advocacy? Is it a legal necessity?
Maybe it's in the same way that, like, zoo animals do. Be like, please don't feed the Bud Foster. You know, it's important that he may...
We need to raise Bud Foster awareness.
We want Bud Foster to still... Our hope is that we can eventually release him back into the wilderness. And if you feed him, he loses his instincts to find food on his own.
If you see Virginia Tech's defensive coordinator eating out of your bird feeder, do not interrupt him.
If he's cartwheeling shirtless through your backyard, call someone.
That's why he has a lunchbox. He can't figure out how to open it. And they're just hoping one day Bud's going to crack that sucker open. And then that's when they know it's time to go back to the woods, Bud. You're good.
Like Harry and the Hendersons.
All right. Here's Foster4Prez's statement. No college team that has yet to win a national title in football will ever win a national title in football. Now, can either of you name the most recent team that won its first claimed national championship?
Was it BYU?
No, there's been, I think, two since BYU.
Colorado.
Colorado is second most recent.
Florida?
Florida is the most recent.
Yeah, that's right. But after years of making fun of Florida football for not existing until 1996, it still surprises.
but since then, you know, since 1990 when Colorado did it, it's only been the two. Everybody else who's had a turn on this carousel has already been there, and it is complicated by the fact that if we're talking about, you know, who's won a national championship, that technically includes a lot of teams. That technically includes Stanford. Technically includes Iowa. Technically includes Rutgers.
I feel real safe saying that two of those three teams in 1,000 years of play will never win the national title.
But
about once football consolidates all the way back down to just Rutgers and Princeton?
Okay, once that happens,
then the answer is definitely no. Because if we're just saying starting today, if you don't have a national championship, you won't ever get one. I mean, Oregon is obviously the closest to cracking this particular nut most recently. And while I think we are fine with where Oregon is right now, nobody's picking them to win the national championship next year, right?
Right. Right.
Right. And there are some that in recent years, like Michigan State made the play. Well, Michigan State already has a title from many decades ago. So, like, right. It's a very specific list. And the Hokie thing is definitely relevant. Virginia Tech is on the short list of teams that have been in the discussion. Oregon probably is top on the list.
I mean, let me just put it this way. Kentucky and Syracuse could play for the national title this year, hypothetically. And if either team won, that would not change this question. They both have one that they claim already.
Pitt, Minnesota. That would not get us any closer.
No.
No. Although I will say this, that's cheating. Because the first school that I thought of was Minnesota, because Minnesota had a run. And that run was like, what, in the 30s? Mm-hmm. And if Minnesota won a title now, I'd consider it just as miraculous as, you know, or more miraculous than, like, you know, Oregon pulling off their first one.
Yeah, Minnesota's most recent of their seven claimed titles is from 1960. So you're right. Yeah. It would be a thing, but that's what makes this a hard question. That there are a lot of teams that could come out of nowhere to win the national title over the next 10, 15 years, and it wouldn't be their first.
There have been so many teams that have been one single game away from doing it that the probability for me is too appealing. So I think that the general point that our Bud Foster advocate wants to make, it's a good one because it shows that there's actually a really small number of teams who stand a good to great chance of competing for a national title. In terms of probability, I'll still Riverside it because there are so many teams like West Virginia. West Virginia was so close in 2007, man. They were so close to playing for a national title, and they would have been hell to face. They would have been a nightmare for anyone preparing for them, and they were so close. Let's not talk about what happened, just in case the tender ears of some scarred Mountaineer fan who remembers what happened happened to be tuned to this podcast. They lost to Pitt.
They lost bad. They lost to Dave Wanstead, Pitt.
They lost to Dave Wanstead with Steve Slayton and Pat White in the backfield.
That
was probably like a 10-win Pitt team, though, right?
Yeah, sure, certainly.
Sure, sure.
if you like doubled it or so.
I'm trying to be kind, Ryan. I'm
trying to be a better person. Wisconsin's got to go on the list as well. They've been hovering right around that level for about 20 or 30 years now.
Yeah.
It's, more like 20, but.
Yeah. And I mean, there are SEC teams that haven't done it, which when you look at what could happen in a Nick Saban-less world, what a sweet dream. What a sweet dream that would be. Who could just, bolt up and get there first? It would be a moonshot kind of year, but that happens, especially when, I don't know, you pick up Cam Newton 2.0 and you line up your schedule just right. You could win a national title that you haven't claimed before. Like, that could happen.
Is it okay? Here's the other question. Is it easier or harder with a 4-team playoff to get in? I mean, I guess it's easier because you just have the paths to entry are doubled, so the chances that you're going to get one of these teams is significantly expanded. And probably, I mean, look, certain results notwithstanding from the last 2 years, if you can get to the playoff, you should be good enough to, in theory, win the national championship, right?
Yeah, but you have to beat not just one more talented team. You have to beat two.
Right. Unless you're Alabama, in which case you really only have to beat one.
In which case you just have to not fuck up.
Which they never do, ever.
We'll get one more out of the way real quick since it's semi-related. This is from Garrett Mueller at Mueller with two ones instead of L's on Twitter. Michael Dyer was down.
Yeah, he was down.
Yeah, speaking of Oregon, Michael Dyer was actually down.
He was totally down. Auburn ruins everything.
I don't think him being down, I don't think that would have changed the outcome. Is the problem.
He was down, Ryan. The spot was good. He was down.
Maybe he shouldn't got stuffed on fourth and goal from the one. I don't know.
Matt Davison kicked the ball and it was an illegal play. Missouri won that game. Okay.
That's right.
Jabbar Gaffney didn't catch the ball against Tennessee.
Nope.
Wasn't a TD. Got away with it anyway, y'all. Woo-hoo. I would like to select this question, which is some desperate college football program. This is from @booksnotwooks, by the way. Greg F. Some desperate college football program should bring in Jeff Fisher just for hilarity. No, man. No. I don't need to watch that. I don't. You keep him in the NFL where he can be humorous. I don't need to see him come to college and run like some trash 3 tight end run offense that doesn't go anywhere and tries to play games to 10-7. Get that poison away from me. Not today, Satan. Not tomorrow. Not any week. Not next month. Not next year.
I feel like desperate is the wrong adjective.
Complacent.
It's almost like a
sleepwalk.
Yeah, it's like a complete lack of like you should be more desperate than this.
Well, isn't this kind of what Illinois is doing right now?
Man, wow. Kinda. Yeah.
I mean, they have a coach who took a team to the Super Bowl, did not win, stuck around for a long time, made it to his second team, didn't work out there, and now just sort of took a college job because he's a name and recruits and blah,
so,
blah, blah, blah.
Following the geography, this means Jeff Fisher to Mizzou.
You know what?
Ooh.
That's not the worst idea.
There are literally worse ideas.
Here's what I really like about that, though. You get Rams fans who are like, oh, thank God. Thank God the Rams left and took Jeff Fisher with them. The ones in St. Louis, that is. And they have to turn around and watch him take over Mizzou football.
Ooh, man. Ooh, man.
Babadook with a mustache.
So, like, so the whole thing would just be Jeff Fisher. It's like he shipped the Rams. Like, he didn't even move with them. He just stayed.
He's the transporter.
Think about this. Jeff Fisher was an interim coach for the Rams. Like, he's been an interim coach for, two franchises that moved. Like, how much more can you say, like, undumpable, like, spouse?
He's a, right? Like, he, you know what he
like,
is.
Y'all still...
He's a damn barnacle.
He's a witness relocation agent. He gets you to your new city. He makes sure you're set up. Got a new look. Got new friends. New ties to the community. All right, moving along. Who's next? Raiders, you're moving to Las Vegas.
Yeah,
your name.
Oh, this makes a lot of sense.
Oh, the fish in Vegas. He'd be a legend.
He'd wear sunglasses and people would be like, man, he's got a rock and roll attitude. And Jeff Fisher just says shit like, no, it's bright.
I hope Jeff Fisher tells strangers that he's Andy Reid and they're just like, wow, you look great.
He's really slimmed down, yeah. Andy Reid tells people he's Jeff Fisher, and they're like, "Woo, you went to shit, boy."
He's in Vegas laying down 7-9 straight every time.
It's just a big man. It's great if we're playing poker. Terrible blackjack. I'm a holding man. Just waiting on this straight.
Hold. Oh, you holding again? Oh, hold.
Man, if he gets what I think he should get, man, 2 7s and 2 9s. just waiting on it. How many times can this happen in a row? You'd be surprised.
I think he's cheating, but in a very confusing way.
I cannot get over the fact that he said, I'm not going fucking 7 and 9, and then got fired.
My God. Got fired days after being extended.
Yeah.
The God.
All right, let's stick on theme. This is from Ryan Sump at Ryan Sump. Nebraska wasn't dumb for firing Bo Pelini because they should expect more than beating non-con cupcakes and bad Big West teams. So Bo Pelini, in his time at Nebraska, there's only one Big Ten team that he lost to 3 times. And that's Wisconsin. So he was not regularly getting his lunch handed to him. The problem was, there are only 3 Big Ten teams that he played and never lost to. And they were Penn State in the middle of some very troubling times, Illinois, and Purdue. Like Nebraska under Bo Pelini was very good at collecting a scalp when they needed one, got a win over Ohio State, did some things against Michigan. They were also very good at, I don't know, losing to UCLA twice. So
yeah, I don't know if anyone else could do a better job there. It's very hard to get people to play there. It just is. And it's never been easy. And even when things were at their best.
It's been easy with certain NCAA setups.
If you tweak the sliders,
if you get some, I don't know, prop players in, so shall we put it, right? And you get a system that is actually designed for teams that are trying to overcome personnel deficiencies, and you get people who have been fed into it their whole life, and you, I don't know, put them on like the best weight program at the time, and yeah, you get, it could be a pretty formidable machine, especially when, like, also those Nebraska staffs, they didn't go anywhere, man. They didn't, like, if you're talking about, like, oh man, coaching turnovers are real, like, that creates real stress on how you actually perform as a program. Yeah, guess what? No one left Nebraska. Like, Frank Solich, like, slept in the attic of their training facility for, like, I don't know, 15 years.
It's also,
everybody was there forever.
I think in the back of every AD's mind at this point is they remember Mark Mangino at Kansas, Jim Leavitt at USF. There was this time when, like, you could be a good football coach, but if you did certain things, and this just happened at Indiana, too. Like, there are some certain things that you can't do now that you probably could do 20, 30 years ago because it didn't get out and players didn't talk about it. And I don't think that's better, but it is different, certainly. And Bo Pelini, you know, there was nothing like that about him. But I think the fact that he was known for flying off the handle, known for maybe losing his cool in situations where he shouldn't have when recorders were running, there is definitely like a liability thing there. Not in a legal sense, but just to like, man, any day I could wake up and find out, oh shit, Bo said what? Fuck. And you know what? You don't have that problem with Mike Riley.
No, not one bit. So yeah, I don't, my official answer would be, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know,
this
man.
This is the hot takes episode.
Bold! All right, you got another one?
I do have another one, which this will be local, a very, very local one. All right. Which is bold statement, the new Brave Stadium, spelled Barves, the new Barve Stadium, will make ATL a baseball city in Marietta. There's nothing in this sentence that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
We had this discussion this week, John Boys and I, about could we name players? And we actually said, no, neither of us can name a current Brave. We were talking about just naming baseball players. We're like, hi, no, I don't know. I like, does Ichiro still play? Yeah,
Freddie Freeman, right?
Well, I didn't know.
Does he play for the Braves?
I think
he's a Brave.
I think Mark Wallers is still on the roster.
Yeah, Steve Avery.
Steve, he's coming back. Paul Ossenmacher. I said yes. He goes, oh man, Bartolo Colon. And I was like, yeah. And we were like, yeah, but we still can't name a Brave. Bartolo Colon signed with the Braves this offseason.
That's right.
Neither
John nor I did it. And he's basically one of the only baseball players we know because he's fat. He's extremely fat. And he now plays for the Braves, which we had to look up.
Well, he's fat and he plays in the league that makes him swing the bat.
Yes.
it's really the combination of those two. Because usually when you get to Bartolo's state of age and disrepair, you're like, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. Nope.
Yeah. The other thing about this, by the way, and I'm really fond of pointing this out because they built it in the dumbest goddamn place you could possibly build this. Like the dumbest. All right. They built it, I believe, at the intersection of 285 and 85.
75.
75, I'm sorry. So 75. So it's the Cumberland Galleria area.
It's basically in a mall under an interstate. I'm only slightly joking.
No, he's not even joking at all. It may be 50 feet off of a gigantic interstate and about 300 feet away from another. And it's next to a mall, and the parking will be about $28 a game. They're like, you should get there very early. Like, there's nowhere to park, and the places around it will not let you park there. They're not even letting you charge for parking.
The parking will be the mall. That's not a joke. That's the plan. The through traffic is a neighborhood, an actual neighborhood.
Like a pretty nice neighborhood where people did not pay to have like trashed Brave fans driving through their lawns.
Yeah, no one voted for this.
No, there was not a vote, remember. There was
a deranged loose cannon city councilman somehow hijacked an entire county, and a pro sports team is showing up. No one knows how. No one has any clue how this happened.
With the low, low price of what was touted as $400 million, and then later they were like, "Ah, it was $622 million."
Oh, we forgot Dan Tip. Shit.
Yeah, we don't need parks.
Yeah,
I believe that's the plan. Is just like fuck parks.
Yeah.
No parks. Public transit to a pro sports stadium.
We got Bartolo Colon.
This is Barto. I didn't know we got Barto. When I say we, I mean the city. I don't mean the Braves. Fuck the Braves. I didn't know Bartolo was a resident. That's good to know.
Dude, he's so fat, man. Do you think he was fat in New York? Woo!
Man, that stadium is like 3 minutes away from Heirloom Market. Bartolo is going to blossom.
More like Air Balloon Market.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So if that's going to happen, yeah, sure, sure. That's totally going to happen. This is an ATL United podcast. All hail ATL United. The footy mob will never die. Yeah, the Braves. We don't know. We don't know you.
We have one pro sports team, and it is United.
God, the Hawks can't catch a fucking break.
No, you know why?
Why?
They got Dwight Howard.
Well,
so that's
why. Yeah.
We tried to tell them not to do this. The Hawks are still cool. The Hawks are still cool.
They built a perfectly likable team. Guess who they got? A gigantic, brilliant cancer. They got like the most brilliant post defender and like one of the best big men of his time who just doesn't make anything better, makes everyone hate him, and then flexes his perfect shoulder muscles. Dwight Howard's got two things. He's got the physical gifts to make him a probably first ballot Hall of Famer in the NBA. Two, he's got a terrible attitude.
Man,
that apparently is right in there with like perfect shoulder muscles.
I'm gonna just bring all this up to Prater tomorrow and see what he says.
He's gonna be like, "Oh, he's right."
I don't think any of this is considered incorrect.
Okay, cool.
This is an NBA podcast.
Is it?
In Major League Baseball.
Yep. We are experts on you know what? We're just as expert on those sports as we are college football.
Yep. Fuck it.
Don't ask what
Spencer went to Monster Trucks on Sunday.
I did. I wrote 4,000 words about it today, actually.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Elena was thrilled.
Wrote sporting events. I wrote like 800 words. Spencer did a lot more work than I did.
I just use words way less efficiently and like ended with some morbid meditation on cities and mortality. It's great.
Oh, yeah, I didn't get into that stuff.
All right, let's really take it off the rails here. At Cuppy Cup, our good buddy.
Oh, boy.
The toaster is the most trash kitchen appliance.
Hmm. I like toasters. I like if I'm making a sandwich. And the question is, do I want toasted bread or do I want like floppy bread? I don't know why I would ever go non-toasted unless I'm in a hurry.
So the toaster is a one note tool, right?
Unless you get real creative. I've seen some cool shit.
and the toaster oven is not, but true. I think the toaster oven is more trash than the toaster because the toaster only does one thing, but most of the time, and not all the time, it can do it pretty reliably. Yeah, every toaster is different. You just kind of got to learn hot spots. Do I need to put it in a second time? 1.8, whatever. Toaster oven, I have had maybe one good toaster oven experience for every 5 times that I was like, this shit doesn't fucking work. And it might burn my house down. But the most trash kitchen appliance, I'm going to be real snobby here. Coffee maker.
Mm.
That's
a broad range of tools, though.
The coffee maker?
Yeah, do we include the Keurig?
I mean the drip coffee maker, the most trash kitchen appliance.
I'm gonna accept that as like a pretty solid case, because there are a lot of other ways that will make the proper amount of coffee. Usually when I had a drip maker, I would end up making like way too much, and half the time making like a horrendous mess and making this like awful breeding ground for bacteria in my kitchen. That's a good call. In fact, like if I want toast is just unnecessary. The drip coffee maker makes things like unnecessarily complicated. Toaster, relatively inoffensive.
You know what? The toaster is the best way to have toast. Like, you can do it other ways.
That's what I'm talking about.
But the toaster is the best way to do it. The drip coffee maker is one of the worst ways to have coffee. Get a tea kettle, get a metal French press, have good coffee. I will fight you.
So I'm 30 years old, and I have never actually used a drip coffee maker. I've just somehow avoided that task, and at this point we'll probably make it all the way through to the pearly gates without ever having used it. For our younger listeners, what all does the process entail here?
All right, so you're going to – standard drip coffee maker, you're going to need three things. Water, coffee grounds, and a coffee filter. You're going to place the coffee filter in the upper basket-type receptacle, and then you're going to put your coffee grounds in. You're going to fill the coffee pot with as much water as you plan on making, and that usually gets poured in the back in a reservoir. That water will heat up. It will get sort of dropped over the coffee grounds, goes through a piping system, and it will, you know, infuse itself with coffee, come through the filter. Filter obviously keeps the grounds from coming through with it, and boom, you've got gas station quality coffee in the convenience of your own home.
Wow. No matter what you do, by the way.
Yeah. There is no way to make it better than gas station quality. You can only make it worse.
like there's somebody out there like who knows the special blend. Like, yeah, you just put in more coffee.
Here's how you know drip coffee maker is the most trash kitchen appliance. Go on YouTube and see all the other dumb shit people make. People make brownies, people make omelets, people make mac and cheese. Like, people have spent time and energy figuring out what the fuck else to do with this thing that is just supposed to be good at one thing and fucking sucks at it.
Meanwhile, toaster, all you do is push one button and it works.
That's right. That's right.
Right. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, toaster's just like a heating element. I got nothing against like a heating element. It's pretty honest.
Listen, three words. Brave little toaster.
Thank you. Where's the brave little drip coffee maker? Nowhere. Because that glass carafe fucking broke. I'm so mad right now. I'm sorry. Please, somebody pick a new quest. New statement.
I got one from colleague Billy Gamilla. I do not, all caps, believe the three of y'all could take a wolf. To be clear, the three of you versus one wolf taking the wolf.
Billy, we're gonna take you. Then we're gonna take a wolf just to prove a point.
Brother, listen,
brother. You've been kind. You've supported us. Right now, I'm gonna have to. You know what? I'm gonna strip down naked on all fours. I'm going to attack you like a wolf and show you the meaning of shame.
I thought this was a Rick Rude speech, but then it got...
then it got all kinds of, like, I don't know, who's that? Oh, my God, I did a Bray Wyatt speech, and I look like Bray Wyatt right now.
Lycanthropic.
Yeah, that's a Bray Wyatt speech.
So, a wolf. This comes from Arian Foster, getting pretty bored in the off season and pointing the finger at any of you wolves out there who want some. there are three of us. I mean, we can sacrifice any one of us, and the other two could just pin the animal down until it goes to sleep or something.
Spencer already explained how we're going to do this, and it's one of the most selfless things he's ever said.
Thank you, Spencer.
Spencer,
please, this is the first selfless thing I have ever done in my life, theoretically. Which is the attack? Is I am going to take my left arm, and we're just giving this to the wolf. Okay, it's gonna hurt. It's gonna be bad, but I'm going to take the most dangerous part of the wolf out of the game by putting my big old beefy left arm right in his mouth. So with that taken, I can go and immediately go to work on the eyes and the throat. Then Jason, while I'm screaming, can jump in and attempt to double up on the neck.
I'll put him in the rear naked.
Yeah, no, I think it's a perfect approach.
No, right? I'll put him in the Bob Backlund. That's what I'm doing.
Sure, you put him. Can you DDT a wolf?
If you did,
oh, man.
If
I'm
you
sure
did,
that's going on I'm sure that was on a T-shirt in like 2004.
I'm just saying, if you DDT a wolf and we get it on tape, we will have met Vox Media's company-wide video goals for the next year and a half.
If I'm dressed like Arn Anderson, right down to the close-shaved beard and like wearing the like at one point Arn Anderson, there's a clip of him. He shows up to a match with Hogan on like zero notice because somebody else canceled, and he shows up in pleated shorts with a belt. If I DDT a wolf in pleated shorts and a belt, yeah, man. We win. We've got every video metric and goal down.
The problematic video of a wolf being DDT'd. Explain.
Exactly. 18,000 think pieces, and I'm the world's biggest asshole and fired. And
so
Fox is like, we're buying BuzzFeed!
I've been told that the actual like special forces or whatever method for dealing with a rabid dog or canine attack or whatever
I know this, yeah.
It's you offer the arm. It's like what Spencer is actually saying. If you have a coat or something, you whip it off and wrap it around the arm as quickly as you can, and you just present the arm to the dog like bait. And then you reach up and clench as hard as you can on the throat, and you just wrench it.
See? I told you. We got a plan.
We got this, brother. Billy, yeah. You don't have – I know you sick your biggest, baddest wolf on us. Do your – don't – please don't do that. No,
from Louisiana.
Billy knows a tiger.
Oh no, so. The LSU Florida rivalry has gone too far.
By the way, he'll get drunk and get confused, and that's how we get a tiger sicked on us at a tailgate.
Tiger.
Fortunately, like he'll literally hold that tiger.
We will not defeat a tiger.
Exactly. They'll be like, well, listen, since PETA said we can't have one anymore, we got an extra one. He's just hanging out.
This ain't a tiger. This is a colleague.
This exactly. This is a friend, an esteemed, loyal colleague from Louisiana State University.
My cousin.
I have a question from Matthew Falleri. Hockey is the best sport to experience live and in person.
Couldn't tell you.
So, I'm not clear on the why he had to say live and in person, because I have not watched a lot of tape delayed hockey in person.
I think he was emphasizing that you're definitely in the place. Maybe overemphasizing, but yeah, thanks. We're in the building.
This is pretty close to correct, I think. I don't think it's as good as a really, really good football game in the right atmosphere. Or for that matter, a really, really good basketball game in the right atmosphere. I think just because, like, hockey live is very hard, at least I have found, it's very hard to sort of keep track of what's going on because the puck's really fucking small and it moves really fucking fast and the game can sort of move quickly and, you don't have as much time to appreciate the slow building of things that, even in basketball, when you watch a fast break, or a buzzer beater, there is sort of that time where you can track the very short story that you're watching happen unfold, and hockey doesn't always happen that way. That said, the sound of what happens in hockey, skates and sticks and guys crashing into plexiglass, is actually, I think, the most pleasant auditory experience you can have at a game, live, in person.
They're real good. Like it's a really, 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 really great experience live, and it's very difficult to beat. I will say, if you can get to a soccer match between two teams that really, really hate each other, that's right there. Like because they'll actually harm each other. Like, I mean, actual harm.
Right.
And that's sick, and that's wrong. And it really does make the viewing experience better because it's incredible. It's
hockey is the biggest gulf between being there in person and watching it on TV.
Oh yeah, like a band with a bad producer, man. Like it's just it's not even close. You have to see it live. The only time it gets even remotely approximate to the live experience is during the playoffs when you've got Doc Emmerich screaming at you the entire time and the teams and the fans are just like amped to the point where even the difficulties of presenting it on TV are overcome by the energy. It's a really, it's an insane. The other thing that is really, I don't know if good is the word, but that it doesn't really quite translate is if you go to like any kind of UFC or boxing match, because nothing happens and then suddenly like everything happens at once. And everyone there is waiting and hoping someone gets their ass kicked. It is the most sinister feeling you will ever experience at a sporting event, sitting around people who are like, yeah, I hope I see you get fucked up. Like that's, and you're like, yeah, get it, man.
I see a man almost die. Not die, yeah. Almost die.
No, there's people in the crowd who are like, yeah, knock his head off. I don't care. I'll Instagram it. Like there's people at boxing matches and UFC fights who are like ready to do that.
Let's try to do a couple more. All right, I'll rip this stupid Band-Aid off.
Do it.
Rusty Shackelford at Tehoff62. Bill Murray sucks.
He might personally, man. Like, I don't know. In his divorce trial, it was alleged that, like, he had actually hit his wife. That was never substantiated. Can't substantiate it, but like, yeah, that could have happened, man. Like, he could be kind of a shitbag.
He also has a reputation, I think in New York and probably in LA too, of like, if you're throwing a big party, he might just show up. And people have decided that that's cool and good because Bill Murray is a fun guy in there. They've said that's also like, maybe not okay. It's sort of on the line. If we're just talking about Bill Murray, the entertainer, he did do the Garfield films. I think we have to acknowledge that.
Oh, well, we can go back.
There's that fucking one where it's this artsy shit where he's like meeting all his old girlfriends or whatever, and half the movie is just him driving between their houses.
I do not know this Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, that's no, I'm gonna find it.
It's something about flowers or something.
It's not The Razor's Edge, is it?
No. The Razor's Edge is the one that he actually did Ghostbusters
to do. And The Razor's Edge is also not very good.
It's not very good at all. Yeah, like it's not like a great book to start with, and then the adaptation really doesn't do it any favors. Yeah, he did Rock the Casbah. If you haven't seen Rock the Casbah, don't. It's terrible. He did that in 2015, man. It was a bad call.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there is definitely a thing where either we or Bill Murray or both, we all realize, like, hey, you know what's good about Bill Murray? Just a little sprinkle of him. Like,
yeah.
Kingpin. Kingpin is good because there's just a little Ernie McCracken. Wild Things.
Bill Murray's
really good in Wild Things, but that's because there's only a little bit of him.
Yeah, he's perfect. He's in what? He's a corrupt lawyer?
Yeah.
Ideal.
Royal Tenenbaums, he's really good in that, but just a little bit here and there.
Fantastic. Like, saved his career with Rushmore by basically being kind of like a bitter, drunk, middle-aged man. Kind of a stretch, really, for Bill Murray at that point in his life. I mean, he's great.
So what is the statement that we're working with here?
Bill Murray sucks is the statement. I don't think we can.
You can't go that far.
I don't.
Not
think
true.
Can go
Bill,
that far.
Bill Murray, the entertainer, can suck. Bill Murray, the person, unverified. Right. I suspect he could.
Right.
Yeah. But
as an entertainer, I think he has done more positive or more enjoyable than unenjoyable, or at least it outweighs it. So
there's a lot you can ignore also. Like I mentioned the one Bill Murray movie that I've seen that I didn't like, but there's probably 40 that I just chose not to see, and that is not – I don't hold those against Bill Murray. He didn't force me to watch them.
So Hyde Park, New York is where Franklin Delano Roosevelt where his home is, his former home. It's now a, you know, museum, and you can go on tours and say, hey, here's where he sat and did this thing, and look, this thing that this emperor or king gave him. Hooray! And most of the time, these tours are very much, they're pretty, you know, flat. They're not really trying to rock any boats, but I've been on this tour, and the tour guide talked specifically about Hyde Park on Hudson, the movie in which Bill Murray plays FDR.
Yeah.
And this tour guide, this federal employee of the National Park Service, savaged Bill Murray. He just couldn't believe how bad he was and how bad this film was. So, like, yeah, Bill Murray, he can throw up a brick. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the greats all do. But yeah, I agree. Bill Murray can suck. I don't think maybe he sucks overall is where we necessarily want to go with that.
I mean, that's a preposterous position to say.
I'll ride with him in the Budweiser.
And things of that nature.
I'll ride with him in the Budweiser bathing trunks in a Houston backyard, getting ready to take a dive off the high dive with a glass of scotch and a cigarette in his hand in Brushmore. That's iconic. That's pre-Wes Anderson tweet overload Wes Anderson. Like, that's quality right there.
You want me to end with one that we'll all have a lot easier time with?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is from Justin, at Drifter1717. Rutgers will have at least 3 Big Ten wins this year.
Well, they do get to play Michigan State.